We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Game 1 of the World Series in the books, and the Red Sox an 8-4 win tonight. They've got a 1-0 lead in this best of 7. 62% of the time in the past, the winner of Game 1 has gone on to win the World Series. Maybe that'll make you feel better about it, maybe not. But even if you don't buy into that history playing into this year's series, because it doesn't, there's plenty that the Red Sox did tonight and frankly have done all season to make you feel pretty good about how this series might play out the rest of the way. And I said Red Sox in 5 going in, and nothing that happened tonight dissuaded me from that whatsoever. And what you saw, and we keep going back to the same word, and I noticed the Boston Herald, when they sent out their push alerts, you know, the breaking alerts to your phone, hey, the Red Sox won, just in case you weren't watching the game for some reason or listening to the game on WEEI, use the word relentless. Lou Maloney kept using the word relentless tonight during the broadcast, and especially after that Nunez home run, to describe the Red Sox and their offense and their approach. And that's what it's been all season from this team under Alex Cora. And tonight, the Nunez home run, that's going to get a lot of the attention, and deservedly so. But that relentless approach, that idea of, okay, you're going to be aggressive, you're going to try to put pressure on this team right away, that started from the first inning. And I just couldn't love the approach more that the Red Sox took going into this game. I mean, Mookie Betts gets the advantage right in the bottom of the first inning. An extra out, Brian Dozier can't catch that pop-up, looked like he maybe had a shot to make the play. But then, you know, you're going up against a Dodgers catching contingent, regardless of who's back there, that hasn't been great at throwing out runners, even though the Dodgers are a pretty good team in terms of holding runners on with their pitching staff. So you take advantage of it right away. And Mookie Betts is able to take the base. The throw skips into center field. Then Yasiel Puig misses the cutoff man, allows a runner to get into second base. Again, Benintendi aggressive on that play and just beating a throw into second. They challenge it and still uphold the call, and he's safe at second, so he's back in scoring position, and JD Martinez drives him in. That approach right from the beginning is a big part of what's made the Red Sox as successful as they've been this season. The idea that you're going to come out and try to take the fight to the other team right away. And it's not like this team has done it all season, has sat around and waited for things to happen. That's not how they play the game. And it's really fun to watch, for one. There have been times, especially with some of the outs, remember early in the season, running into outs on the base paths, which felt like a continuation from last year, where it made you pull your hair out and you're a little bit frustrated with it. But on the whole, it's been a fantastic approach for this team, and it continues with moves like going to Nathan Eovaldi in the 8th, which now feels almost like a matter of course for Alex Cora. And he went to Eduardo Rodriguez prior to that in a big spot, which he hadn't gone to. And Rodriguez had been sort of relegated to mop-up duty prior to that, but you bring him in to try to get an out in the 7th right before turning it over to Eovaldi in the 8th and then Kimbrel in the 9th. That was another aggressive play, sort of a relentless approach kind of play. And you probably saw, if you were following along on Twitter, I don't know how many jokes I made, one of them about Alex Cora must have all the Powerball numbers because he pinch hit for Rafael Devers with Eduardo Nunez and got the 3-run home run. But Cora's had a bit of a magic touch. I know it's cliche to label it that way, and it maybe is taking some of the credit away from Cora in a way, because it's not like, I don't think he's making these moves based entirely on gut feel. I do think there's a lot of thought and analysis and strategy and scouting reports and things like that that go into it. At least that's what he said when he's been asked about his moves, when he's talked about the things that he's done. But there's got to be at least a little bit of a feel for this team, for this clubhouse, and what the Red Sox need at the right point. And having a belief in different guys. And JD Martinez said it after the game, Alex Cora has got confidence in every single guy, every one of the 25 that they've got on that World Series roster in a big spot. Whether it's Eduardo Rodriguez in the 7th trying to hold on to it what was at that point a much more perilous lead than it ended up being after the Nunez home run. Going right back to Craig Kimbrell in the ninth. Again, the aggressive base running and trying to jump out to a lead on Clayton Kershaw early in the game in the first. And, of course, going to Eduardo Nunez, pinch hitting for Devers, a guy that was seeing the ball and still is seeing the ball really well. You know, Devers is certainly not somebody that you're uncomfortable with in a big spot. The way that he's hit fastballs, especially all season, but especially in the postseason, has stood out for this Red Sox team. I think anybody would have been fine with Rafael Devers in that spot. Nope. Here comes Eduardo Nunez, 3-run homer, and for all intents and purposes, the game over at that point. And the Red Sox get a World Series Game 1 victory and have set themselves up really well now, obviously, going into Game 2. If for no other reason, then it puts David Price once again in a bit of a lower leverage playoff situation. And as great as Price was his last time out against the Astros in the ALCS, for a lot of Red Sox fans, it came with the yeah, but of, okay, it was a pretty low leverage playoff spot. And it's weird to say that in a clincher, but for an ALCS game, the way that series was going with the Red Sox winning 3 in a row, coming back to Fenway Park if they lost it, it didn't seem like the screws were all the way in there on David Price when it was, you know, you really look at the totality of the situation. But he still pitched really well. And he's trending well in this postseason. There's no question about it. And now you turn the ball over to him tomorrow, and the Dodgers go to a guy in Hyunjin Ryu, who, if we're doing this show in Los Angeles, I think some of the concerns that some Red Sox fans had about David Price, Dodgers fans would be expressing about Hyunjin Ryu, because he's gone the other way in the playoffs. He was great the first time he pitched in this postseason against the Braves, and then had a clunker the last time out against Milwaukee. So the Sox in a great position now going into Game 2, and we'll be talking about it here for the next hour plus. Also getting plenty of post-game reaction from Alex Cora, from Chris Sale. We'll talk quite a bit about his outing tonight as you figure Sale, unless he get a sweep, I guess, the Red Sox will figure Chris Sale will make another start in the not-too-distant future in this series. So we'll talk about that as well. All of it with you at 617-779-7937, 617-779-7937, the number to hop on board here on Red Sox Review after this World Series win for the Red Sox. And let's get to Sale a little bit here now, because the biggest thing I was looking for out of Chris Sale tonight was velocity. And it was there early on, 94-mile-an-hour fastball right from the get-go. The first inning, he topped out around 96. Most of the four-seamers were 94. What wasn't there for Sale was the command. And whether it was fastball command, at times with the slider, pitches were getting up a little bit. He missed on the one to Kemp in the second inning, obviously, that Matt Kemp took deep. And he really labored through this game. It felt like a grinded-out effort from Chris Sale. Part of that might be health, whether he's dealing with the shoulder or still the after-effects of the stomach bug or a combination of the two. But that was sort of the way it played out for both of these starters, for Clayton Kershaw as well. And it wasn't like Kershaw came in and was dominant. For all of the, you know, I saw a lot of numbers leading up to the series about the Red Sox, not a great curveball hitting team, and the Dodgers have these lefties, chief among them Kershaw, that have terrific curveballs. Well, Kershaw didn't have that tonight. First of all, he wasn't willing to throw the curveball all that often, which probably tells you something, right? If he's not going to it early in the game, it probably means he doesn't have a lot of confidence in the pitch. And you also saw him just really grinding. The pitch count didn't get up as much as it did for Sale quickly early in the game, but he still lasted basically the same amount of time. They both pitched four innings plus a batter or two. And it was a bit of a letdown, but in the same sense, I guess it wasn't really all that surprising. That's what the postseason is now. You see these starting pitchers with a few exceptions, and Kershaw was one of them in the last series. He pitched a seven-inning win against the Brewers. But you don't see these guys going the seven, eight innings. It's about, can you get five? Can you get to the bullpen in the fifth, sixth inning, somewhere around there, and then bring in a bunch of guys to throw heat and try to match up and figure it out? That's in part why you get four-hour games. But it didn't quite live up to the Game 1 marquee billing Sale v. Kershaw that I think a lot of people wanted it to. As far as Chris Sale going forward, happy to see the velocity there, because I feel like if it were some sort of a health issue, if there were like strong lingering effects from either the shoulder or the stomach illness or the ailment, anything that he had in the past week or so, the velocity wouldn't be there. But it was. There were command issues with Sale. That's something he'll obviously want to iron out if he pitches, whether it be in relief, if the Sox have a chance to close it out in a couple of games, or if this becomes a long series and he's got to make another start and then maybe even pitch in relief. Those are the types of things that you'd think are easier to work out because it's a mechanical issue. It's something that doesn't suggest that there's something physically wrong with him or something too serious that's physically wrong with him right now. Those are the big numbers I was looking for early in the game. What's Chris Sale hitting in terms of velocity on the Fenway radar gun? And it was 94, 96 consistently with the fastball. Very, very good sign for the Red Sox and for Red Sox fans. And one more really good sign before we take a break and get some of your phone calls at 617-779-7937 was Craig Kimbrel tonight. And sure, you could give Craig Kimbrel the same yeah, but that you gave to David Price in Game 5 of the ALCS, but it's still a World Series game. It's still a spot where you want Kimbrel to come in and make it as uninteresting as possible. Four-run lead, feeling very confident at that point. The Dodgers seem like a deflated team anyway after the Nunez home run. Valdi came in, is throwing 100 miles an hour, just mows him down in the eighth. All you want to do in that spot, and all you want to see if you're a Red Sox fan watching Craig Kimbrel, is hammer the strike zone. And he did. 6-7 straight pitches for strikes, 2 quick strikeouts, easy inning. Lead was never in jeopardy to start the inning, and it was never in jeopardy at any point when Craig Kimbrel was in the game. And this is another guy who's been dealing with, whether it's pitch tipping or some mechanical issues or a combination of the two, has been dealing with some shaky outings in the postseason. And there's an angst. There's a certain level of stress that rises a bit or has in the postseason when Craig Kimbrel's come into games. Didn't have to worry about it tonight. So not only a lot to take away from this game that's positive for the Red Sox in this victory, but looking ahead in this series, a series where the Red Sox are heavily favored and should be, a series I think the Red Sox will and should win, there's a lot to be positive about when it comes to the Sox and what they might do in these next few games. 617-779-7937, the phone number. If you're leaving Fenway Park, you were at the game tonight, stayed up late and watched it, got the chance to listen to Joe, Tim, and Lou on the call, WEEI tonight. Want to hear from you, your reaction to this Red Sox win. We'll get to that coming up next. 1 hour of Red Sox review coming your way as we break down this World Series Game 1 victory. Velani with you until 2 a.m. at Sports Radio WEEI.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Swung on and belted into left center field. A base hit. Coming around third, Benintendi. He will score. It's 2-0 Boston. Well, that ball almost took the head of Benintendi right off. In fact, his helmet's still out there in the infield. J.D. Martinez ripped a hard single to left center to drive in the Red Sox second run.
Recapping the Red Sox win.
The 1-0. Mooney swings it, drives one to left, high and deep by the wall. Gone! Three-run pitch homer, Eduardo Nunez. Can you believe it? And the Red Sox lead it 8-4. And how about the magic of Alex Cora?
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Chris Villani on WEEI.
Red Sox Review, Chris Villani hanging out with you until 2 a.m. This is a late night for me. But it's the World Series. You know, if J.D. Martinez is going to play through some pain, I think I could do the same thing. Martinez, in case you didn't hear it after the game, he did talk with Joe Castiglione and Tim Neverett. He said he rolled his ankle coming around second base on that double in the third inning, trying to stretch it into a triple. Probably would have had it if he didn't fall. But said the ankle is sore, but he's okay. It's the World Series, and he's going to continue to play tomorrow. Now, what happens in the National League Park? Well, that's a little bit more hazy. It doesn't sound like it's going to be Mookie Betts in the infield as much as some people really want it. Alex Cora said the odds of that happening are pretty slim. You'd have to think Jackie Bradley Jr. is the odd man out. If they are able to have a 3-0 lead going into Game 4, maybe he can be a little bit more gutsy and take JD Martinez out of the lineup. I don't see that happening, though. And the reason is Alex Cora's approach. Again, it goes back to approach. And he's been pretty consistent with a lot of things in this postseason, including win tonight and figure out tomorrow. If that means Sale in the eighth, if that means Eovaldi in the eighth, if that means going to Matt Barnes earlier than at any point in the regular season or postseason, as he did tonight, then so be it. And I honestly think the Red Sox may be in a position 3-0, 2-1, a very positive position going into game four. They're just better. And I know the better team doesn't always win in baseball, but this is a team that right from the get-go, winning 17 out of 20 lopsided scores, and a lot of them right back at the beginning of the season in April, just looked like a wagon. And for all of the nits that were picked by me and so many other talking heads looking at this team, whether it be the bullpen, whether it be David Price, Chris Sale's health, any sort of spurts, streaks, or ebbs and flows with the offense, anything like that, they have still continued to put together wins at a prodigious pace, 108 in the regular season, as you know, and they could make this a truly historic postseason. If they win this in five, I mean, there's not many teams that would have been able to go through the postseason and finish it off in about 14 games or so. I mean, as it is, dispatching back-to-back 100-plus win teams, including the defending World Series champions in the fashion that they did, you just sort of get the sense that it's their year, they're better than everybody else, and due respect to the Dodgers, who I don't think are going to go quietly into the good night here, they're going up against a team that is just superior to them in too many ways. And that was the case tonight. Wouldn't be surprised if that's the case tomorrow as well, as the Red Sox go into game two. We'll try to make this a 2-0 lead at Fenway. And even if they do get a split, even if LA does get a split, they've been there before twice. Red Sox went into New York, won two games on the road, finished off that series. Went down to Houston, won three straight, finished off that series after, in each case, that team was able to get a split at Fenway Park. That goes back to the word of the hour, the word that has described this Red Sox team in so many different places tonight, relentless, and it certainly fits. One open phone line, you can grab it now at 617-779-7937, but let's get to your phone call, starting with GK in Quincy, wants to talk about Chris Sale's performance. Go ahead, GK.
Hi, Chris. I thought they played tremendous today, especially with the pitching and the hitting, the offense. Mm-hmm. They really had a good game. And the other thing I'd like to say is that I think they should wear two turtlenecks tomorrow night because it's going to be cold out.
I like your thinking. Layers, right? Layers is the key. It's going to be 39 degrees. That's the low for tomorrow night. All about layers. And as far as the effort goes, sure, it was a complete effort top to bottom. And as she mentioned, Chris Sale, at least in the comment line there, and thought that he pitched well, I'd respectfully disagree there. This wasn't Sale at his best. I think he'd admit that. He had to grind. That's not what you expect out of Sale, but it was the same thing for Kershaw on the other side. Part of it, I think, is just the nature of the game now. Like I was saying a few minutes ago, you don't often see these 7-8-inning postseason masterpieces from starters anymore. But it was a grind for Chris Sale, especially when it came to locating the fastball. Now, that being said, Tim Timmons certainly didn't help him. And this is one of those storylines that sort of gets swept away by the win. But Timmons was brutal early in this game, squeezing both pitchers. But it did seem like Sale a little bit more than Kershaw, especially in the fourth inning. He threw two strikes that he didn't get. I'll say borderline pitches if I'm being generous, but frankly, I thought both of them found the strike zone. Doesn't get either one of them. Has to get pulled out of the game at that point. The pitch count was already up at a point where Alex Cora wasn't comfortable going any further, and as a result, he's out in the fourth inning, or after four-plus, he's out in the fifth inning. So Timmons was rough tonight, but Sale didn't have it. This wasn't the Chris Sale that you expected to see, and I think Dodgers fans would say it wasn't the Clayton Kershaw that they expected to be, and that's what it comes down to, that relentless nature. Who's going to get a big hit from a guy like Eduardo Nunez? Andrew Benintendi with a four-hit performance. JD Martinez, one of the stars of this team, obviously. And then even a guy like Sandy Leon. Exit velo on his first hit, 59 miles an hour. forget about not getting pulled over on the Pike. I mean, there are a lot of areas on Route 1 in Sturro where you're speeding, but they might even let it go. 59 miles an hour on the exit velocity on that rocket base hit to right field. But a two-hit performance out of the bottom of the lineup. And that's what the Red Sox have done really all season long. Lengthen the lineup and turn it over and get production 1 through 9. Let's go to Kaylee in Boise, Idaho, listening to this Red Sox win. Hello, Kaylee.
Hello there.
Hey.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to give a shout out to the Red Sox Nation. We had the best party ever tonight. Watching Nunez hit that home run. Holy moly. It was amazing.
Yeah, that it was. Big hit for Eduardo Nunez, and a lot of success for Red Sox Nation there, coast to coast. First time I think we've ever had two female callers to lead off a Red Sox review. We're going to go ahead and say that's a record. Paul in Concord up next on David Price, looking ahead to Game 2. Hello, Paul.
Hey, what's up? I want to do some reverse buts on David Price. By the way, good point about the success after the 1-1 split. So I thought that was a great point.
Thanks.
So some reverse. Yeah. So the and buts on Price or yeah buts. How about but he did it against Verlander in a must win game for Houston. Yeah, but he struck out 9 and 6 innings with no walks. And yeah, but we won both games that he started. I'm just kind of getting tired of the negativity on Price, where the guy's about to start a huge game for us tomorrow, and it's just kind of frustrating. I'm not necessarily not coming from you. I haven't heard it from you. But even everyone I talk to, they're just like, they do. They have the yeah, but in there. That's what you're supposed to do. You close out a game, a team in 5, instead of giving them a chance to win it in 7. I thought he did amazing.
I agree with you. Look, Price was outstanding in Game 5. And I'm pointing out the yeah, buts because I've seen him for the last few days. And David Price has earned a lot of the postseason criticism. I don't think anybody's denying that based on his overall track record. But if you're not looking at Game 5 and saying he gave you everything that a postseason ace should give a team, finally, okay, you want to say finally, after 8 or 9 or 10 tries, however many starts he had, finally he got it right. You've got to at least give him that. Otherwise, you're unfairly moving the goalposts on him, in my opinion. And going into tomorrow, and this is what I was saying with same thing with Kimbrel, and people will throw the yeah buts on Kimbrel. Ah, it was a 4-run lead, wasn't a 1-run lead. It gets to the point of being a little bit ridiculous. It's like during the Patriots dynasty, and well, they won the game. Yeah, it was by like 7. It was a win, but it wasn't a good enough one. Come on. With Craig Kimbrel, he gave you exactly what you want in the 9th inning tonight. So you can say, well, it was a 4-run lead, the lead was never in peril, etc. But the bottom line is, he went in, pounded the strike zone, did exactly what Craig Kimbrel does when he's pitching at his best. And he didn't give the Dodgers any sniff of a prayer of mounting anything at all in that 9th inning. It was done. And the same thing with David Price against the Astros in Game 5. So you want to say, okay, finally, $31 million, it took him long enough. All of those a lot of them are fair criticisms of Price in the postseason. Fine. But he has earned at least a little bit, I would say, of the benefit of the doubt going into, I guess I got to say, later tonight's Game 2 in this start. I certainly feel better about Price right now than if I'm a Dodgers fan with Hyunjin Ryu. One guy is pitching better as the postseason's gone on. The other guy has gotten appreciably worse and struggled against a lineup that is nowhere near the caliber of the lineup that he's going to have to face tomorrow night. Now, it may not be about the starters. You got to think Dave Roberts, especially, is going to have a quick hook here. Doesn't want to go down 0-2 going back to L.A. It may become a bullpen game sooner than later. But if you're just looking at the starters, I feel better about the one Boston has, despite his overall postseason record, just because of what I've seen in the last week or so from these two pitchers, respectively. 617-779-7937. Steve and Lowell up next on Mookie Betts. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
What a great win tonight.
It was.
Coming back from the stadium, and I'll tell you, it was electric tonight at Fenway.
Excellent. Yeah, it's good to good to see the Fenway crowd stick it out through some tough weather throughout the night.
Yeah, well, it's October baseball. That's what it's all about. I wanted to call and wanted to talk a little bit about Mookie Betts. We come into the playoffs with, probably the MVP at the top of our lineup. And since the beginning of the playoffs, he's been non-existent at the plate. Do you think that the Red Sox can keep up this type of offensive production without arguably the MVP of Major League Baseball, not producing?
In a short series, yeah. In a postseason series, yeah. And he's still, like, you know, even without producing tonight, Steve, and thanks for the phone call, you go back to the ALCS, he did have some good at-bats. I know this sounds like an ultimate cop-out for Betts. He had good at-bats. Bradley had some good swings tonight. Well, he's still 0 for 4 with 2 strikeouts and 3 left on. With Betts, he has the ability to still jumpstart this lineup even when he's not swinging the bat as well as he would like. He struck out a couple of times tonight, but he did have the hit to start the game. Then he's able to steal second, get into scoring position, score the first run. He scored twice tonight, also drew a walk. So he's one of those players, one of those dynamic players that even when he's struggling, commands the respect of the opposing pitcher. You know that if he gets pitches to hit, eventually he's going to hit one. He's going to be able to do some damage. And even when he's not quite right, he can still jumpstart a lineup. With guys like Bradley, Leon, Kinsler, the guys at the bottom of the lineup, if they're off, they're off. You know, Ian Kinsler was not hitting anything tonight. And maybe the only second guess that people out of Alex Cora, other than the people who were very quickly second-guessing that Eduardo Nunez and then were rapidly trying to delete the tweets they had sent just moments before, the only real second guess might have been not pinch-hitting Brock Holt in that spot in the fifth inning where the Red Sox were trying to break it open, got the bases loaded with Martinez up and nobody on, and Kinsler eventually hitting with two outs after they pushed a couple of runs across, strikes out. That might have been one that you look at and say, okay, do you want to go to Brock Holt in that spot? Because Kinsler's just not a guy that's going to do any damage if he's off. Mookie Betts, on the other hand, at the top of the lineup, whether it's the ability to draw a walk, whether it's just the different types of pitches he sees, the way hitters or way pitchers attack him is going to be different than the way a pitcher is going to attack a struggling Ian Kinsler or Jackie Bradley Jr. They can still get it done with Mookie Betts doing what he's doing right now. Now, over the course of 100 games or 50 games, you'd start to see a bit of a diminished return point there. But to get through a 7-game series, yeah, they can get it done. Because even with Betts struggling a bit tonight, struggling, quote-unquote, still had 2 runs, still jump-started the offense at the beginning of the game. You know, he was still somebody that made a positive, net positive impact on this Red Sox win tonight. John in the car was also at the game tonight. He's up next at 617-779-7937. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I just left the game not that long ago. I'm heading back to New Hampshire. But I'll tell you, just to touch base on that last call or Mookie Betts, I mean, it doesn't matter if he's not hitting that well. His glove is there, too. I mean, he's always contributes to every single game. I mean, the guy is always there for us. And Alex Cora, I mean, this guy, you talk about magic. You're absolutely right. Magic is nothing but Alex Cora.
Yeah, look, every move that he's made, just about every move, especially when it comes to pinch hitting and who he's going to start, has worked out. And I'm with you on Betts as well. It's just, he's one of those guys like J.D. Martinez. You ride out the slumps because you know eventually it's going to pay off. And even, you know, J.D. Martinez can take an offer, but if he's seeing, you know, if hitters are working or pitchers are working careful to him and he draws a walk or two, then he's on base for Xander Bogaerts. Same kind of thing for Mookie Betts. If he's able to draw a walk, he could steal a base, get into scoring position, and that's exactly what happened tonight. And your point about the glove is another good one, too. The Red Sox outfield defense has been, you know, one of the key cogs of this team throughout the season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mookie Betts is definitely the guy. He's MVP all the way.
Great year for Betts. Great year for J.D. Martinez. And, you know, those guys will be, what, first and third in the MVP voting, something like that this season. And the outfield defense point, that breaks both ways. And this is one of those little quirky things that, again, doesn't get a ton of attention. But when you look at the series and how games play out and playing now in ballparks where teams don't have a ton of familiarity. You know, you go to Los Angeles, you go to most of the other parks in baseball, the dimensions might be different. Some outfields are bigger than others. They're not all sort of the cookie cutter 330 with 400 to straightaway center field, but none of them are as quirky as Fenway Park. And if you don't have a lot of experience playing in this type of an outfield, it's a huge advantage for the team that does, in this case, the Red Sox. There's not as much of a learning curve when it comes to going to a place like Dodger Stadium as there is to a place like Fenway Park, even though Dodger Stadium has a pretty vast outfield to try to cover. And I think you saw that play out a couple of times tonight. The most obvious one was in the bottom of the third. I don't know for sure whether he makes the play, but Enrique Hernandez has got to at least know that he's got a shot to make that play on J.D. Martinez's ball off the garage door in center field. And it seemed like he didn't have any sort of a clue that he even had a shot to make that play. He gave up on it way too soon. Might not have gotten there anyway, but he gave up on it way too soon. And that, to me, is at least in part a product of the landscape and not being all that familiar with it. And the result, Martinez gets the double and drives in a run at that point. And, you know, there were other spots, too. I think it was, they changed left fielders so many times. I was trying to remember what it was. I'm pretty sure it was Jock Peterson who was trying to make a play on a hit by Andrew Benintendi, one of his four hits. He had two that were rockets, and he had two that were sort of a soft serve job. And one of them was Benintendi's double in the seventh inning, kind of floats it down the left field line. Peterson didn't take, again, I'm pretty sure it was Peterson. They had four different left fielders tonight, but I'm pretty sure this one was Peterson. Didn't take a great angle on it. Maybe he doesn't get there, but that's also a weird left field to play if you're not an American League team. You don't come here all the time. And you got the left field, the stands kind of jetting out there. No foul territory really to speak of once you get a little bit past the bag at third base. Does that play into it? Does that make it more difficult? Maybe. Those are those little quirky things that I think could come up in a World Series, in a short series where there's not a lot of time to rebound from mistakes. The Dodgers had a few defensive mistakes tonight, whether it was Yasiel Puig air mailing the cutoff man in the first inning, whether it was the play by Hernandez giving up way too soon on the J.D. Martinez double to center field. They had their share of defensive miscues. Red Sox had their share in the ALCS, and I guess maybe it's time for another team to have theirs. But you look at that as something they use the term X factor a lot on the morning show, I guess. That's an X factor right there. Quirky outfield. How do the Dodgers adjust to it and cover ground and try to minimize damage when the Red Sox do put the ball in play? They didn't do a great job at it tonight. 617-779-7937. Pete in Kingston was at the game tonight and apparently has opinions about it. Hello, Pete.
How you doing?
Great. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I want to talk a little bit about Chris Sale.
Sure.
So I think Chris Sale did awesome tonight. I think this is the second best team in baseball that he was pitching against. He had seven Ks, and he went 3-2 with a lot of guys. But you got to understand that these guys, that's guys that can hit, foul off anything, any pitch. And so he was throwing strikes. It was a tight strike zone, and he did great out there tonight. So he's got it. He's in it, and he was there to win, and he did the job for us.
Well, he certainly got the job done, and the points about Tim Timmons on the plate and the quality of the lineup, I don't think those can be overstated. Those are both valid points. I don't think Chris Sale had it tonight. I think he'd be the first one to say he didn't quite have it tonight. What I liked, and as a texter taking me to task, ignoring what Sale's been through physically the last few weeks, I think maybe I didn't make the point clearly enough, or you missed the point. My point is, it looked like physically, Sale had it together. It was the velocity that you wanted to see from Sale. When he's not right physically, you know it pretty quickly because the fastball is not where you expect it to be. That wasn't the case tonight. Fastball was there from Chris Sale in terms of velocity. It wasn't there in terms of the location. And the home plate umpire, Timmons, played a role in that. He made Sale put it on a tee at times. But there were also points, whether it be the Kemp home run, that was an obvious one. A couple of pitches to Machado, who did just enough to do damage tonight. There were multiple points in this game where you could tell he wasn't locating the way he wanted to. And those three ball counts, were they a product of some good at-bats by the Dodgers and fouling pitches off? Sure. But they were also a product of falling behind in counts. And that was a common theme for Sale, whether it was the fastball or the slider. There was a struggle to locate those pitches tonight. So I think the positive of that is I really do think that physically, even if Sale isn't 100% right now, it doesn't seem to be the physical ailments that are slowing him down at this point, because his fastball velocity is still there. Might have been the cold weather. Maybe it's jitters game one of the World Series. Maybe it's just one of those games, or having a bit of an extended time off after the Red Sox wrapped up the ALCS relatively quickly and he hadn't had to pitch a lot over the past week or so. This wasn't a game where he had his A-plus stuff or even his A stuff. Was he good enough to get the job done? No question about it. And six different relievers came in and finished that game off. What I'm saying, though, is I think the velocity for Sale suggests to me that the next time out, you know, this might have been the opportunity for the Dodgers. You're going to get Sale at his B-minus, C-plus range. That's your shot to beat him. This was it for the Dodgers. It went by the board for them because their guy, their ace, also wasn't at his best, wasn't nearly as sharp as his last start against the Brewers when he was dominant. I don't know that you get that Chris Sale again. You may not get that Clayton Kershaw again either. But what I saw from Sale tonight and the velocity that he had and the way that he was still able to hit 94, 96 early in that game suggests to me that physically he's closer to right than not. And the Dodgers may have missed an opportunity to get to Sale when he wasn't at his best tonight. But another half hour to go on Red Sox Review, 617-779-7937. We'll hear from both Sale and Alex Cora coming up next and mix in more of your phone calls between now and 2 a.m. It's Red Sox Review. Chris Villani hanging out with you on Sports Radio WEEI.
Kimbrough straightens up on the hill. The 3-2 pitch to Turner. Swung on and missed. Strike three, and game one belongs to the Red Sox. The Red Sox have a one-game-to-none lead in the World Series over the Los Angeles Dodgers with an 8-4 win here tonight. Andrew Benintendi, a huge night at the plate. 4-for-5, 3 runs scored. And a pinch-hit home run by Eduardo Nunez in the bottom of the 7th inning helps lift the Red Sox to an 8-4 win in Game 1 as they take the lead in the 2018 World Series.
Tim Nevin on the call of the Red Sox Game 1 win, 8-4 the final. Chris Villani here. It's Red Sox Review, Sports Radio WEEI. Relentless has been the theme of the night. Sarah Langs, who covers all things sports for ESPN, had this stat. Boston has scored 32 of its 64 runs in the postseason with two outs. And again, it's just it's a continuation of what this team has done all season long. And that's, if you want reason to be confident, not only tonight, but going forward, nothing that happened tonight was that out of the ordinary. I tweeted this. It's production from all parts of the order. Anxious moment or two, courtesy of the bullpen. It was really that Ryan Brazier inning. That was it. And then Alex Cora makes the right move with Eduardo Nunez. That was it. That's the 2018 Boston Red Sox. The same formula that got the Red Sox to the postseason, got them through the regular season with 108 wins, is still helping them and leading to success in the postseason. And now they're 3 wins away from the World Series. Alex Cora has put together already a very special run in his first year as the Red Sox manager, met with the media just a short time ago at Fenway Park, and here's what he had to say following this Red Sox 8-4 win in the World Series.
Put some good at-bats, a lot of good at-bats together from the first at-bat, and we put pressure on them. That's what we do. We stay off the edges of the strike zone. We attack pitches in the middle of the zone, and we did an outstanding job offensively.
Pete.
Alex, you told us before the game you thought it was going to play out like this with the matchups and pinch hitters and everything. Is that, for a manager, a fun game necessarily to play it that way? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's a challenge. They're going to mix and match. They're going to pinch hit. They're going to bring their relievers. And you have to, you know, and you know how I say I hate managing the other team, but actually you have to manage them and see who they have and where they're going to come in and winning is going to be the point that, you know, the matchup is going to benefit us. And in that inning, I think, you know, we had a few matchups that we felt comfortable with. You know, Benny gets on. We got Mitch against Baez. And then we had Nooney against Wood. That's something that we talk about it today. You know, when he came in, probably he was a little bit disappointed that he didn't start because he's been starting against every lefty. But we felt that Rafi was going to hang in there with Kershaw. And we're going to have having him on the bench, it was going to pay off. You know, you got to keep a righty. You know, Pierce is playing. Ian was playing. So keeping him in the dugout, you know, and out of the lineup was going to probably give us a chance to win the game. And it worked out. You know, he was prepared. He wasn't upset, actually, that he wasn't playing. I told him, hey, be ready, man. You might have a big at-bat tonight and do your thing. And he did.
So what did you take out of Chris's start tonight?
Yeah, that was good stuff today. They did a good job taking pitches and fouling up pitches, but stuff-wise, probably the best in the postseason, and he feels really good. No problems with the belly button, so that's a plus. So he'll be okay for his next one.
First row on your left, Allison.
Just a couple questions about your bullpen. Joe Kelly, could he have gone another inning? Were you considering that? Was there anything, any consideration about future games and having to kind of keep that in mind? And also, can you just go through like the seventh and eighth inning and just the decisions you made?
Do I have to? We consider a lot of stuff throughout the game. You know, at one point, we were going to take Chris out, you know, after four, but then I realized that it's a seven-game series, and for how good our bullpen has been in October, our starters, you know, we need them to go deep into the game. And then he walks Dozier. We went to Barnes. He's been outstanding with traffic, and he's been great in October. He actually did an okay job, you know. You know, his breaking ball wasn't there today, but limit the damage. Joe was outstanding. His changeup, his fastball, that was good. Knowing that we were going to go to the Rover in the eighth, either Rick or Nate, we decided to go with Brazier. It wasn't, you know, his best night. And but like I said earlier today, Drew and Eduardo, they're going to have to get big outs somewhere, somehow, against lefties in this series. And Eddie did right away, you know, 2-0 fastball up in the zone, gets Bellinger out. We had on, and we had it, you know, the rest of the game. But I think having Nate and Rick available, it gives us a chance to be more aggressive during the game earlier. You know, they've been amazing in that role, and the fact that they're able to bounce back and give us a start, a quality start, that's what matters. And but today was a whole team effort. That was cool to see. A lot of guys that you know, they struggled towards the end of the season, and they did an outstanding job tonight. That was a very team oriented win.
Right in front of here, Buck.
All right, that was some of what Alex Cora had to say following this 8-4 victory, team oriented win, and a lot of the same kind of themes. Attacking pitches in the middle, trying to be disciplined at the plate, disciplined but aggressive, humble at bats, as he's called them quite a bit. And then going through some of his thinking with using his bullpen, it was interesting. He thought about taking Chris Sale out immediately once the fourth inning was wrapped up. And Nathan Eovaldi at that point had got up. He never really started throwing, but he was just kind of getting loose. So there was some speculation as to whether Eovaldi would come in early in that point and try to help the Red Sox. It was very much, you know, game very much in doubt at that point in the game, well before Nunez's 3-run home run. But instead says, all right, it's a 7-game series. I got to try to get more out of Sale. And he didn't. Again, Timmons, of all the at-bats, he didn't help him. The home plate umpire, Tim Timmons, certainly didn't help Chris Sale that first at-bat in the fifth inning when Cora's trying to squeeze a little bit more out of him there. I considered going Joe Kelly a little longer. That was another second guess that I saw pop up a bit when it came to the way that Alex Cora managed his bullpen, but Brazier did enough to get through it and get to Eduardo Rodriguez, and that was a big moment for Rodriguez. And I don't think it gets sort of lost in the shuffle because the Nunez home run ends up being a four-run game, but Rodriguez had been a guy who had been relegated to mop-up duty. He had been in a lot of low-leverage situations. Hey, it's 16-1, Erod, go get him. He had been in those type spots, and he hadn't looked great, but he's got to come in there and get out against Cody Bellinger, and he's able to come in and get that job done. Those are the types of things that win postseason games. Those are the types of outs that bullpens need to get to survive, to get to the next inning, to give this deep and talented offense with a lot of different guys that can hurt the opposition a chance to get the job done and do that damage, as they as the hashtag likes to say on Twitter. So that was a big out there by Eduardo Rodriguez, and it was in a spot that he hasn't been in many points in this postseason. It's been put him in when the outcome's not in doubt, not in a position where you absolutely need an out in that point, and he was able to do it. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to the calls. Rob in Taunton up next on Red Sox Review with Chris Villani. Hello, Rob.
Chris, what's up, brother?
How you doing?
Great win, man. I just wanted to talk about Kimbrel, how he looked like he did midseason. And a lot of it, I think, had to do with he definitely was tipping his pitches. I mean, there was a call from Gagne, to who was once a Red Sox, to Alex Cora to let him know. And Cora put him in touch with Kimbrel, saying, you know, you're tipping your pitches, and told him how he was doing it. And I think he definitely looked like the closer, the all-star closer that he is, that he's eventually going to be. I think he looked like it tonight, like he did midseason, as opposed to most of the postseason games. Very impressive, though.
Yeah, no doubt. And thanks for the phone call, Rob. I mentioned it a little while ago. Of all the things to take away from this game going into the next games, Craig Kimbrel was the biggest thing for me. And I remember being on these airwaves with John Tomasi prior to the ALCS, talking about Craig Kimbrel and his importance to this Red Sox team. Because if Sale is bad, or if David Price is bad, or Evaldi, Porcello, any of the starters struggle, it could potentially torpedo a game. If Kimbrel doesn't have it, it could torpedo a series. We've seen that happen at other points of the postseason with other closers, with other guys that are constantly called upon in those big situations. If they are struggling, it can torpedo a team's chances at a championship, not just one game, or put a team in a spot where, okay, the starter's out early and now it's a bullpen game. Biggest innings, biggest moments, you need that guy that you can count on to get those outs in the ninth inning. And look, there's been a lot of speculation the last week or so. Will it just be Evaldi? Will it be somebody else? Because Kimbrel's leash is going to run out here with Alex Cora. But tonight, this was the Craig Kimbrel you want to see. Strike after strike after strike, as boring a ninth inning as you can possibly make it. Dodgers never had a prayer. And that's got to give you at least a little bit of confidence going into the next spot. If it's tomorrow night and it's 3-2 in the ninth, or 5-4 in the ninth, or 7-5 in the ninth, and it's not a four-run cushion, that you're going to see the Kimbrel that you saw for really the first half of this season. Second half of the season didn't pitch a lot, wasn't as effective. We know some of the shaky postseason outings, but tonight was exactly what you want to see from Craig Kimbrel. As far as the pitch tipping goes, two really good reads on this. One, WEEI.com, Rob Bradford. He spoke with Eric Gagne that Rob just mentioned, Rob from Taunton, just mentioned in the phone call. And Gagne didn't go into exactly what he pinpointed with Kimbrel, but he talked a lot about his ability, Gagne's ability, to recognize when guys are tipping pitches. And he texted Alex Cora. He said he texted AC, and he said, "I see something. I don't know if you want me to tell you what it is." Cora said, "Yes, of course I do." So he told him to text him, and he kind of went from there. He never even really met Craig Kimbrel before. He said he met him once. But he had seen something in Craig Kimbrel's delivery, or probably more accurately, in the way that he was setting, coming to a set position before he delivered the pitch, that suggested he was tipping his pitches. And he also saw the way that hitters were jumping, especially on some of his off-speed stuff, or staying off it.
and having a more disciplined at bat that you'd expect than you'd expect against Craig Kimbrell. The other good read that goes in a little bit more detail is Ben Harris in The Athletic, and he shows sort of the side-by-side comparisons from Game 4 in Houston and where Kimbrell's hand is inside the glove when he comes set, the angle of his arm, different types of things that are probably the tips that Eric Gagne was noticing when he called Alex Cora and got the whole ball rolling on trying to quote-unquote fix Craig Kimbrell. Whatever it was, tipping the pitches or not, Kimbrell was outstanding tonight. And a huge boost for the Red Sox going into Game 2 later tonight and going into the rest of this series, because that's a guy who, I mean, as he goes at the back end of that bullpen, so many questions in the bullpen and who's going to pitch one inning or what inning and how is Alex Cora going to figure out these matchups. It doesn't matter if your closer, if the guy that needs to be that light at the end of the tunnel to finish off the game, to make the ninth inning boring, if he's not right, then everything else you do in the bullpen becomes much less relevant. But Kimbrell was right. He was everything you'd expect him to be tonight. A few minutes left here on Red Sox Review. You can squeeze in another call or two if you like. It's 617-779-7937. The Red Sox are up 1-0 in the World Series after an 8-4 win tonight. Chris Villani talking about it with you, Sports Radio WEEI.
1-0 pitch to Devers. Swung on and belted to the right side. Diving is Dozier. It's past him for a hit. Benintendi comes in to score. That's the 8th run batted in the postseason for Rafael Devers. Red Sox lead it 5-3. The major league record in the postseason for consecutive games with runs batted in. 8. He's tied Lou Gehrig, Ryan Howard, and Alex Rodriguez.
How's that for a statistic? Rafael Devers ties Gehrig, A-Rod, and Ryan Howard for the longest streak of playoff starts with an RBI as he gets his 8th tonight, and he's 22 years old. As of an hour and 51 minutes ago, he's 22 years old. What were you doing when you were 22? You're probably drunk right now. I'm just guessing. What's Devers doing? He's winning the World Series. Winning game one of the World Series, at least. 3 more to go for the Red Sox. Chris Villani hanging out with you. I know when I was 22, probably right now, I was probably drunk. Way too long ago. I don't even want to think about it. But the Red Sox 22-year-old Rafael Devers had a big night tonight until, of course, he got lifted for a pinch hitter who ended up sealing the game with a 3-run homer. Just the way it works under Alex Cora. 617-779-7937. We'll jump back to the phone calls in just a bit. Who is this? It just says Kelly. You don't know who this is? I just wanted to find out who it was on my own. Bridget's going to find out, though, instead. Another thing that's impressive about the Red Sox, is a texter brought up the starting pitchers that this Red Sox lineup has faced. And it really is impressive when you look at the teams they've had to beat, but also the starting pitchers they've had to beat. They've beat the Yankees and the Astros, 100-win teams, but they've knocked out the likes of Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Luis Severino, CeCe Sabathia, Clayton Kershaw tonight. That's the type of team that the Red Sox have been really all season long, but it's been especially impressive in this postseason. All right, apparently it's Elliot New York who wants to talk about Joe Kelly. Hello, Elliot.
Hey there, how you doing?
Doing well.
I just wanted to make sure before the end of the night we mentioned smoking Joe Kelly. I mean, this guy was unusable in July, right?
Yep.
And he comes out here in the postseason, the guy's having a renaissance. And I don't know if it's Alex Cora and what he does to these guys' confidence, but you know, the old Red Sox, maybe under John Farrell, I'm not sure who it is, but you stick Joe Kelly at the end of that bullpen, all of a sudden that guy's broke for the year. But now, I mean, this guy's coming in and he is lights out, electric stuff, and they're getting the best out of him. Pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah, Kelly was excellent tonight to the point where Red Sox fans were wondering whether he should have stayed in longer. And you heard Alex Cora get the question about that in the postgame press conference. That's how good he was. Should he have stayed in longer after he got a couple of strikeouts? But, you know, the way Cora used the bullpen tonight, despite a few anxious moments from Ryan Brazier, big out from Rodriguez, and then Evaldi, Kimbrell, and Dunn. We'll see now going forward if this means, does Rick Porcello start game 3? I don't know if Alex Cora named a starter in the last hour or so for game 3. Maybe he did, but Evaldi worked tonight. Maybe that pushes him back to game 4. One way or another, though, Red Sox bullpen, six different guys got the job done tonight, and the Red Sox an 8-4 win in Game 1 of the World Series. Our pregame coverage starts tomorrow at 7 for Game 2, an 8:09 first pitch. I'll be on postgame with you guys. Great job by Bridget Prue tonight, producing Red Sox Review. My name's Chris Villani. You can find me on Twitter, ChrisVillani44. Have a fantastic night, everybody. The Red Sox on top, 1-0 in the World Series.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.